Welcome to Early Homecoming, a podcast for missionaries who have returned home early and for those who care about them. My name is Kristen Reber, and I am the author of Early Homecoming, a resource for early returned missionaries, their church leaders, and family. On this podcast, you will hear stories and gain insights from myself and other missionaries who returned home early, as well as experts, parents, and church leaders. Join us on the path of understanding and healing as we share our stories and insights about the phenomena of returning home early from a mission.
I am here with Blake. Blake was born and raised in Portland, Oregon. He attended Utah Valley University for a year before receiving his mission call to Brazil. He was in Brazil for about 2 months and is now serving as a service missionary in the Utah Valley Service Mission. So, Blake, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yes. So, Blake, we have a few different things to talk about tonight, one of which is definitely your service mission. I'm really looking forward to talking about that. But first, let's get a little background on you. If you want to just kind of share your story with me of coming home early, but maybe first starting with, you know, why you chose to go on a mission.
Okay, yeah. I feel like with the culture that we have in the church, especially for males, that it's just kind of, I feel like most of the time there's not really, for I'd say more than 75% of people that go on missions, there's not really like a specific thing that's like, oh, that is what made me go on a mission. This is what makes me want to go on a mission. I just kind of knew the church was true and knew that it was my priesthood duty to do so. And I guess just kind of the missionaries that I have seen in my ward growing up were great examples to me. And then also both my parents served missions and talk about it quite often and how much they loved their experiences on their missions. Anyway, and it's just one thing that I just kind of always assumed that I would end up doing as long as I kept my testimony, which I did, obviously. And anyway, so that's, I kind of just decided to go on a mission just because I knew the church was true and I knew I had a duty and obligation to do so.
Okay. So it was more out of duty than a true desire, or were you looking forward to it at all?
Oh, yeah, I was looking forward to it for sure. I originally wanted to serve in the United States. That was my dream mission was somewhere in the United States. I didn't want to go abroad like most missionaries, but then I remember opening up my call and just being terrified and frightened of the idea of going, having to learn a new language, having to learn a new culture and such. But after I opened up my call in May and then I left in August, and I had some time to prepare mentally. And, by the time I left, I was pretty excited. I was excited to be able to meet new people, learn a new language and so on and so forth. But I was definitely excited. And it was a desire as well. A desire that I've always had to. If there wasn't an obligation and a duty, I think I would have had to, there would have been a lot more thought in going into my decision.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. That definitely makes sense to me. Now, so you get to the MTC. How did things go there?
The MTC was interesting. I went to the Brazil MTC, the CTMA, and it's a small little place. It's probably about 150 missionaries.
Oh, wow. Very small.
And yeah, very small. And since I went in the summer, there was a decent amount of American missionaries there, but there's not typically a ton of English speakers or American missionaries there. But there was probably about 50 when I went. And I was excited the entire time going down. I was still excited. I was of course a little bit nervous, but it wasn't anything that I was worried about. And then I got to Brazil and then things started kind of hitting on like the second day of like, oh my goodness, I'm in a new country. MTC itself is in what feels like the middle of downtown Sao Paulo. And it's cramped in the middle of a bunch of poor areas. It's a nice spot. You can, on P days on Wednesday, they let you go out and walk around the streets and stuff like that. Yeah, it was, and the rooms are pretty, they're not anything like the apartments in Brazil, but they're pretty nice and nothing crazy. That was kind of my just initial reaction, is things are a little bit not as poor or as run down as I thought inside of the MTC, but the outside was definitely poor, okay, and run down.
So you had kind of culture shock right from the get-go. Do you feel like you were ever able to adjust, at least to the MTC, or did you kind of have culture shock twice, once for the MTC, once for the mission, or what happened there?
Yeah, kind of like what you said, culture shock twice. It was the first couple of days were definitely hard, and especially I was there in the springtime, so there was a lot of rain and thunder, which made us not be able to have as much outdoor time there, and they're lacking some outdoor facilities. They have one outdoor basketball/volleyball court, and that's kind of it. And so whenever it would rain, then we just had to stay inside and play Uno and stuff. Anyways, and that's one thing that I think that made my MTC experience kind of hard, is that I was not getting my blood flowing and stuff like that, which was something that was kind of difficult. But it was, after a couple weeks, I kind of adjusted to it. But yeah, it was kind of just like the first couple days, first week was definitely a culture shock. And especially because, like I said, there was really no, besides those 50 missionaries, no one else could you couldn't really talk to anybody else. And plus you were divided into even smaller groups of into obviously districts of 8 missionaries. So you were really just with these eight guys all day long. And then anyone else that you wanted to talk to, you couldn't even talk to. And when you did try to, you did try to talk to them in their tongue in Portuguese, you guys had no idea what either person
kind
was
of
saying.
An isolating experience, not quite like the Provo MTC, where it's very structured and everybody speaks English for the most part. You kind of got quite the cultural experience right from the get-go.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Was I now, as being a service missionary, I get to serve at the MTC and see the differences between the two. But yeah, I think that especially now, about how crazy it was just full immersion of right into the culture there, and which is definitely good. But
do you think it was so hard to go from the United States straight to Brazil, just right into the culture?
I'm not exactly sure what made it so like that. I have been diagnosed with anxiety, so I mean that's definitely a part of it for me. But I did an exchange program and lived in Guatemala for 4 months when I was 12, so I without any family, so I had been used to those type of situations. So I was kind of just expecting it to be something that I've already, the culture shock and being away from family and that kind of stuff, to be just kind of something second nature. But it was just every time that I thought that I was going to be get over this huge wave of just craziness, that every time I thought I was going to go over it, it just hit me again twice as hard. And it's just also I always wonder how my mission experience would be different based on if I had a different mission call, or if I went to a different MTC, or if I had a different companion in the MTC. I've always wondered how that would change things up, but obviously I don't know, and I won't ever know. So I've just had there's a lot of things, as many early return missionaries know, that a lot of questions that you ask for those first couple months, but you just have to press forward with faith. But it was just being put into this neither of my teachers spoke English. So it was hard enough to try to learn a new language when they didn't even know our language, and having a schedule that was so all day going, which that's not, that's something that I was already used to. I mean, I was already staying very busy before, but when you stay this busy and you're already so drained, but then plus make it in a language you don't understand, plus trying to feel like you're, when you're in the MTC with everyone else, that's, well, more than half the MTC already speaks the language, it's pretty frustrating, and it makes you feel like you're not moving forward at all whatsoever. Anyway, so there was just a lot of factors that I think played into it.
Definitely sounds like
that played into.
Now, were you able to go to your mission field at all?
Yes.
Oh, right, because we talked about the two different kinds of skulls and sharks. So,
yeah.
So now you went to the mission. Walk me through what happened there when it became apparent to you or to your mission president that it was time for you to go home and reevaluate.
I remember my MTC president. I didn't really say anything to him, but I was just like, I honestly don't know if this is right at this point and such, but and then you always hear the quote, just like, forget yourself and go to work. So I was just trying my best to do that. And I you always hear like, if you can make it through the MTC, then you'll be fine in the field and that. So that was my goal, is just to make it through the MTC and then things will get better. And then I leave the MTC and I show up to my mission, and my new companion meets me at the airport with the 8 other new companions there and my mission president. And he kind of doesn't even really do like a group interview or anything, or doesn't do individual interviews. It's kind of more just like a, hey, how you guys doing? This is your companion. Anyways, and then we just go straight to the field from there. Anyway, so it was kind of, I was expecting a little bit of more of a transition, but once again, there wasn't very much transition there. And then it seemed that those 2 weeks just ended up getting worse and worse and worse. And so I went and talked to my mission president about the thoughts and feelings that I was having and the experiences I was having. And he was like, that isn't what a mission's supposed to be like, but he's like, just take every day, a day at a time, take each minute at a time. We'll talk again next week. Anyway, so then a week later we talk and I was like, yeah, things still aren't getting better. Every day feels like it's a year, and me and my companion weren't getting along very well. Anyways, it felt like it was the perfect storm of everything that you could possibly think of was going wrong. And he just kind of said, well, this is between you and the Lord. Like, this isn't something that I want to be able to step in the way of or be able to do. So he kind of left the decision up to me. And that's when I just really started fasting and praying and trying to know what was the best decision for myself. And a lot went into the decision. A lot went into debating laying out the pros and cons, but then also trying to just have the Spirit guide me and tell me what to do. It's another hard thing was that I felt like I was staying out for reasons that weren't like good enough reasons, as in like I was thinking about like how miserable I was, but at the same time I'd think, oh, but like if I went home, my grandparents and have not had a single kid serve a full-time mission, and they've had 20 kids go through. And so like, what kind of disappointment would I be? Like, I had thoughts like that go through my head all the time. And then it just came to the realization that like, that's no reason to stay on a mission, is to think about what other people would think about me if I came home. And it just wasn't the best situation for me or my health. I wasn't noticing. I'd been there for just about 2 months and nothing had changed really from the second day to then. And I had lost probably 25 pounds. I couldn't eat. And so my body was just not reacting well to anything.
Okay. So yeah, you had a lot going on, and sounds like your mental health was affecting your physical health pretty drastically. And you made the decision to go home, and your mission president supported that and helped you get home quickly.
Yeah. So yeah, my mental health definitely ended up taking a toll on my physical health when my entire body was just shutting down. It was just not the best situation. And I, like I said, just kept every day I was losing weight. You could just see it. And it was not great. But then, yeah, so my mission president could obviously tell that same thing. And he, yeah, gave me the decision and said, I don't want to say yes, stay out, or yeah, you know what, you have to go home. I don't want to do this one way or another. I want you to be guided and directed by the Spirit. So that this can be, when you look back on, if you decided to go home, you can have that spiritual confirmation of knowing for yourself that you were home for a reason, or there was something else that you were supposed to accomplish. And anyways, and then once I did tell him that I had made the decision to go home, he supported me in that decision. And he said that it did end up taking a little bit of time to get a ticket, but I mean, I wouldn't expect it. He's managing a couple hundred missionaries and is busy, so I wouldn't expect him to be able to take care of something immediately. But yeah, it was a couple more days.
Yeah. So, now, what happened when you came home? What was the general reaction there, and what was happening inside you when you came home?
I just remember that I didn't want to really show any emotions. I was just like, try to hold it in. I remember my mom and dad and sister picked me up from the airport, and they were super loving and caring and like just wanted whatever was best for me. But I remember well on my mission, my parents kind of knew that I wasn't doing well, but they didn't know how bad I was doing. And so my mission president, actually, this was before you were allowed to call home every week. So my mission president just let me call home to talk to my parent. That's another thing that he did. He's like, also, I don't want to make a decision without your parents knowing one way or another, so I want you to talk to them. So I also called them and talked to them about it. And during that time I talked to them, it was kind of hard because it felt like my mom was super, super loving, and my dad has always been loving my entire life about everything. But the last thing he wanted was for me to come home and then regret it. And I could kind of tell that. And he was trying to say that without saying it like that, which I completely understand why he would want that. But at the same time, I could kind of tell that he wasn't really wanting me to come home. And I felt to me like he was more of saying like, I don't know, like it was more going to hurt him than he was caring more about my health and myself. And so that hurt me a lot at the time. But then coming home, that was one thing that I was kind of worried about, was like how I knew my mom was going to be super loving, but how my dad was going to react to it. But he had nothing but love and open arms. So that was one thing that was super awesome, was how supportive my family was. And then also, as I said earlier, my grandparents, I was scared about talking to them and such, but same thing with them. They were just same thing, nothing but love and welcomed me home. That was all good. But then I do remember, like I was saying, I just was trying not to show any emotions at first. And then we got home and my dad went back to work, and my sister went back to her house. And then it was just me and my mom, and I just started bawling my eyes out, and I just all the emotions I just tried to hold in just were flowing. You know, so I'm not a very emotional person at all, but I just couldn't hold it in. And it was just it was a really long week. That's one thing that I think a lot of people who have, you always hear, I feel like about one of every four missionaries is like, yeah, at one point in my mission, like I really wanted to come home because this was super hard and super hard. But I don't think that anyone that doesn't come home early understands how hard it is, first off, to come home early, and second off, that it doesn't just get better immediately as you get home. It's something that I feel like people, like some friends that I have that serve missions, when I got home, they're like, oh, like, it's good to you. I'm so glad you're back. Like, you want to go do this and that? And like, and just assumed everything was normal and kind of disregarded the fact that that they just assumed that everything was, that it was just like coming home made it take all of the pressure off. And it was like, oh, like that was crazy, but like, hope everything's going okay. But they just kind of didn't really, didn't understand that not everything just goes away as soon as I came home.
Yeah.
Anyway, so that was another hard thing.
You're at war with yourself, you know, like you're happy to be out of that difficult situation, but at the same time, you kind of feel like you failed or like you should have stuck it out and, or you really want it all of a sudden. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Then all of a sudden the questions just start flowing. I remember the first day or two was just like, I had doctor's appointments, I had state president appointments. I was so busy that I didn't really have much time to think, but I remember as soon as I started like resting and having some time to think about my experiences, I remember just having thousands of questions. Just why? Like, what was the purpose of this? Like, what is there something that I'm supposed to get out of coming home early? Is there, am I supposed to go back out? Am I just supposed to come home for this specific amount of time and try to gather my emotions and figure things out medically and then go back out? It was just, I wasn't sure at all what to do, where to move forward, any or anything like that. It was just, it was really, it was super hard. And it, like I said, just the questions and you wanting to know the answer to every question, but obviously not being able to have the answers was super hard.
Absolutely. Let's jump forward a little. Tell me about your decision to serve a service mission. How were you approached about that? What were your initial thoughts about a service mission and why did you ultimately choose to serve one?
Yeah. So I, like I said, I'm from Portland. And so I was at home in Portland talking to my stake president there. And he was talking to me about, he's like, obviously I don't want you to rush anything or whatever, but if there are still options on the table. So if you want to know them, like come talk to me about them. Anyways, and then about a month later, I was like, okay, I have figured things out and I've had a lot of meetings with my doctors and feel comfortable to rehear my options. Anyway, so I go and talk to my stake president and he reads me the release letter and then says that, and in it, it said to that if you would like to return to your assigned mission, it would be another 12 months until you can start, until you can apply to return. And I was like, 12 months until I can start reply to return. Anyways, that was just overwhelming to me. And then I was like, okay, yeah, I can't do it. I'm not waiting another 12 months. And I just think I'm going to go back to school or something like that. Anyways, and then a couple days later, he's like, actually, I think there's this another program that you might be able to do. We had one missionary in our stake do it a couple years ago, and it's a service mission. And it's just kind of where you live at home and you work at the temple in the bishop storehouse. And I was like, I'm hesitant. I'd rather just like go out with the missionaries and not make it anything official and stuff like that. He was like, okay, yeah, that's fine. And then I can't remember exactly how it happened. I can't remember if either he told me or, there was an announcement in the beginning of November or middle of November about a new program in Utah called the Utah Valley Service Mission. And so he forwarded the letter to me. And then said, if you would like to meet about this, then you can go ahead and come on into my office and we can talk. Anyways, and it was kind of a brief email. I didn't understand the whole gist of it. So I was like, yeah, I'm open to this idea. And so I went to talk to him. And pretty much, long story short, that was definitely an option on the table for me. And a couple months had went by and I decided that I was either going, I did want to continue serving and I felt like I had an obligation to continue serving. And so I felt like I wanted to be able to give more to Heavenly Father and that I had been blessed with so many amazing things. And I felt like that my service definitely was not done. And so I decided I either did want to return to Brazil or did want to do this service mission. Anyways, and then as he kind of started explaining it to me and I found out more about it, I just, same thing as when I was in Brazil, fasted and prayed and decided that this was the best option for me. And so, yeah, now it was kind of a couple weeks until things got figured out. And then I was able to get reassigned to the Utah Valley Service Mission. And it's been a great blessing.
Yeah, that's awesome. Was it about the Utah Valley Service Mission that made you want to do it over serving at the temple or at the Bishop Storehouse in Portland?
So first off, in the Utah Valley Service Mission, we have over 30 locations that you can serve at. And it's actually a real mission. So UVSM, Utah Valley Service Mission. Whereas in Portland, I do not think that there's a single other service missionary in the entire, at least I know there's not one in my entire stake, but there might be one in the area. And then there was only two places to serve, either the Bishop Storehouse or in the temple. And also I just felt like it would be kind of weird. The whole idea of saying that, like, I was on my mission, but yeah, I would be living with my parents and seeing my family every day and seeing like my grandparents and aunts and uncles often would just be kind of weird to me. And so the opportunity to be able to live away from home, and you still have to live with a relative, but there's a actual handbook now, and the First Presidency is putting in a lot of effort towards this Utah Valley Service Mission. And in the 8 months I've been in it so far, it's has grown a ton, and it's crazy to see every month how things have changed.
So you kind of still wanted just that feel of a proselytizing mission or a traditional mission where you just are like, no, like I'm away from home, I'm out serving, I got different options, you know, different locations. It just felt more like what you had imagined a mission would be like.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. I wanted that traditional feel of being away from home and being able to feel like I was still serving and being able to get to know my Heavenly Father better.
I know that in service missions, you can get assigned for 6 months, 12 months, 18 months. I think you can even get up to 2 years, if I'm remembering correctly, for a service mission. But I also know that with early returned missionaries, you can instead just be reassigned for the amount of time you have left from your proselytizing mission. Is that the case for you, or were you assigned just a different time?
Yeah, that's correct. So you can, service missionaries can be assigned anywhere from 6 to 24 months for elders, and then 6 to 18 for sisters. But yeah, that's the case for me, is I was reassigned to the service, to the Utah Valley Service Mission, to finish out my 2 years.
Okay. And now what are you doing for the rest of your time? Do you get assigned different, do you get assigned different areas or different assignments, or are you on one assignment for the rest of your mission?
So that's completely up to you and your mission leader. So there are 180 missionaries in here, and they're still working out, as I said earlier, they're still putting a ton of stuff together, and it's crazy how fast it's growing. And one thing that they're working on right now is mission leaders and like kind of a mission president type figure. And so I have a mission leader, and he just kind of puts together your schedule with you, kind of explains the service mission to you. He doesn't have the keys of a stake president, but, or of a mission president, but that's kind of the feel that you get. And so he comes over to your house, and he explains the entire service mission to you. And then he gives you a sheet of probably 30, maybe even more places that you can serve. And then he kind of explains, and then you say, oh, this one's an interest to me, can you explain this to me? And he'll explain it to you. And then he'll set up an appointment for you to go meet with them. And so when he came over, I expressed interest in the MPC, the Motion Picture Studio in Provo, the Family Search Center in Lehi, and the Church Office Building in Salt Lake. anyway, so he set up appointments for me, and I went and interviewed at all these, all the places. And then in our mission, about 50% of the missionaries are early return missionaries reassigned. And then about, probably about 25% are, people that had medical histories of like being in the hospital for a specific amount of time where the First Presidency feels like it would be a risk sending them out to a proselyting mission. And then about the other 25% is missionaries with a physical disability that couldn't serve a proselyting mission. And so it kind of makes for a wide range, which also makes for a wide range of availability and schedules. And so that's the what your mission leader helps you with, is be able to figure out a schedule that fits you and allows you to be able to feel comfortable, but also be able to feel like you're growing and hitting your maximum. Anyway, so you can serve, typically most missionaries do two assignments. Some do one, some do five. So it just depends on you, what you want, and what your mission leader can
do. And how many hours a day do you typically do missionary service? How often are you out there doing this?
It differs every day, but it's usually about nine hours of service a day. But I still have a completely put together schedule of waking up at 6:45, reading my scriptures for an hour. So of actual service, it's about 8-9 hours a day, but of 24/7 of doing missionary stuff, of reading my scriptures, of in the morning, of going to my service areas, anyway, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, no, it sounds very, very much like a typical mission, if you ask me. I think a lot of people don't know that service missions can feel like real missions, and in fact are real missions. You know, there's a bit of a stigma there that they're just not the same as a proselytizing mission, therefore they aren't real missions. So I'm loving this. I'm loving getting this information. I think it really needs to get out there. What would you say is the best part of a service mission, and what also is the hardest part of a service mission?
The hardest part has been just not being able to feel like it's like my service and my time is being valued by others. I mean, it's obviously to me, it seems like exactly like you said, it feels like a real mission. But I feel like to others, it's kind of looked over. Another thing I've struggled with, another thing that I've asked questions about is what makes people feel like a service mission isn't a real mission. But then at the same time, I can remember, if I went back to my experiences into my time in Brazil, if you would ask me about a service mission, I probably would have. Not enough people know about it, first off, and second off, it's just like it's not, the word has not been spread well enough, and also it's just like you don't hear about the things quite as often. Or I always have to tell myself, like, I'm not doing this for other people's satisfaction. I'm doing this for myself and my relationship with the Lord. Anyways, not so that's one thing that I keep having to tell myself and like asking myself is that. And then my favorite thing about the service mission is how I am still in kind of a pretty normal situation, whereas I'm still living, I'm in Utah County, and I live with my sister and her husband and her family. But I'm being able to implement a missionary schedule into like a real life type of situation. So I've seen three of my siblings come home from missions and want to keep up these habits that they developed on their mission. And they get home and they keep these habits for about a week. And then after that, it's like everything starts to go away. And I feel, and then my parents have asked them all, like, what made you get out of these habits? Like, what made you want to do this versus this? Anyways, and they're all just like, it's just so much different, normal life from mission life. They're two completely different things. I feel like I don't have time to do all this stuff. But whereas I am living in such a, I guess like pretty typical life where I'm developing habits that I know will last me past my mission. As I said earlier, I went to Utah Valley for a year before my mission, and I did not take enough advantage of the temple, even though there's 2 minutes away. Whereas now I have a couple that are 20 minutes away, but in Lehi here, and I've been able to go to the temple 3 times a week. And obviously I'm not going to be able to keep up that same power of going to the temple 3 times a week, but now knowing of first off the blessings of the temple and how important it is, and being able to realize how having temple so close to you is so important, how I definitely will be able to, since it's not such the transition from a service mission to real life, from a proselyting mission to real life, isn't quite as drastic. I know that I'll be able to keep these habits a lot. I'll be able to make a lot more realistic goals and be able to have more realistic habits that will keep going in, just because of life is so much more similar from a service mission. And then one other thing that I've really enjoyed about it is my personal growth. Whereas on a proselyting mission, I have a companion with me all day, and everything that I'm doing, well, not everything, but pretty much everything that you're doing is because of somebody else. Like, oh, these investigators are waiting for me to come over to their house right now. Like, so we got to go. If I didn't go, I'd let them down. Or, oh, if I slept in half an hour, like that would let my companion down. I can't do that. Everything is on yourself. I don't have a companion to wake me up and say, oh, by the way, it's this time, you're supposed to get up. Everything that I get 100% out of what I put in. And so it's just super cool to see however much I want to get out of this is how much I am going to get out of it. And so if I slack off and I don't do as much, I'm not going to get as much out of it. But if I truly want to grow closer to Christ and be able to have this feel like a real proselyting mission, then I can do that. Anyways, and so that's something that I've also been able to really be able to enjoy is my personal self-progression and growth. So,
yeah, you definitely have that great missionary mindset, and you're just bringing it all to the table, and it's all for the Lord. And it's also, you know, it's also for you, which is what missions in general are about. They're about your service to the Lord, about your service to others. What is the kind of service that you provide in the MTC, by the way?
So at the MTC, I am there on Wednesdays and Fridays, Wednesdays and Sundays. I used to be there on Friday, but not anymore. On Wednesdays, I do the new missionary intake. So when new missionaries come in, I take them through the process of getting checked in, getting comfortable at the MTC. And that's one thing I love, especially after telling you about my experience in Brazil, is being able to realize the things that they're going through and just trying to make any missionary's experience better than mine was. I just take them through the process of getting checked in, getting everything figured out, getting their name tag, getting their luggage dropped off in the room, meeting their companion, and that kind of stuff. And then on Fridays, I used to do Portuguese TRC, so the fake investigator. And then on Sundays, my on-site companion and I do the devotionals. So we're there for the latter half of the day, and then take the missionaries to the devotional, and then also make sure all the interpretations are going well. So there's anywhere from 10 to 15 different languages that need to be translated in the to the devotionals. And so we make sure that there's people there to translate it for, so that everyone there can understand what is being said at the devotional.
Yeah. So as I say, missions are, you know, they're just beautiful things, and it's about your service to the Lord, your service to others, and the service you give yourself. And like what you're saying, setting yourself up in some ways for the rest of your life, you know, and you've been able to turn this situation of coming home early from your proselytizing mission into just a beautiful thing, and that you've been able to see how you can continue your service in the Lord. You know, service mission isn't right for everyone, so I don't mean to say that those who choose to just, you know, go back to school or move on in a different way is bad. No. But there's,
yeah, it's a no, wonderful 100%. Thing that
this is an option now. It hasn't always been an option, yeah, especially the kind of mission that's available in the Utah Valley Service Mission. This is really a neat, unique opportunity for those who, for whatever reason, are not able to serve a proselytizing mission, you know? So that's just wonderful. And I think now they're also, when you submit your mission papers, you're considered equally for a proselytizing mission and a service mission, which I think is just so wonderful to get rid of the stigma surrounding a service mission.
Yeah. Yep. So that, like I was saying earlier, about 25% of our missionaries mm-hmm. just turned in their applications for a mission, expecting to go on a proselyting mission, and got their call to the service mission. So they were shocked by that, but it's also super cool to hear them bear their testimonies about it and talk about that.
What are some of the things that they say getting called straight to a service mission about their experiences with it?
So they often talk about how obviously the initial shock of it and how they were not expecting that, but and then also trying to be able to get over the idea that that's what's happening. And like you said earlier, how it's just viewed as a lesser opportunity mm-mm. and a lesser mission, whereas that's not the case at all. And so that's one thing that they talk about, how they struggle with that. But then, and I think that's one thing that goes for all service missionaries is that at one point or another, you'll definitely struggle with the idea and the fact that, most people see this as either like a fake mission or as like a secondary mission or, you know, that kind of stuff. And so that's one thing that everyone will struggle with at one point or another, but it's been super cool because every single person I've talked to about that has had an experience or had something cool happen to them where they've been able to realize that, like, it doesn't matter what other people think. And and you're not doing this for other people. You're doing this for your relationship with the Lord, and you're doing this to serve those that need help in the community and need help in the church and organizations. They always talk about how it's been such a great blessing and how they know that they were called to this for a reason, and how this, they obviously didn't have the opportunity to serve a proselyting mission, but they say how they feel like they feel like that it's just an equal opportunity for both sides.
Well, thank you so much, Blake, for coming on the podcast and sharing your experiences and enlightening all of us about service missions and just what a wonderful, amazing opportunity they are. For anybody who's interested to learn more about service missions, please go to churchofjesuschrist.org/service-missionary. And I will put a link to that in the blog post that'll go with this podcast episode on my website, kristenreber.com. Blake, is there any last thing you would like to say before we close the interview?
No, I think I've said just about everything.
All right. Well, thank you again so much.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you for having me.
That concludes this interview on early homecoming. If you would like to go deeper into the experiences of early returned missionaries, please consider buying my book, Early Homecoming. You can find it in paperback, ebook, or audiobook formats on Amazon. If you would like to contact me, please come find me on Instagram at author_KristenReber or on Facebook at facebook.com/KristenReber. That's KristenReber.